Chapter 12. How Al-Qaeda Took Root in Iraq and the Story of Abu Mus'ab al-Zarqawi. The United States war in Iraq has energized Al-Qaeda, its affiliated groups, and like-minded jihadists around the world. What has happened in Iraq is what bin Laden could not have hoped for in his wildest dreams. The United States invaded an oil-rich Muslim nation in the heart of the Middle East, the very type of imperial adventure that bin Laden has long predicted is the Crusaders' long-term goal in the region. The American invasion deposed the secular socialist Saddam, whom bin Laden had long despised, ignited Sunni and Shia fundamentalist fervor in Iraq, and provoked a classic defensive jihad that has galvanized jihad-minded Muslims around the world. This is not an arcane matter of Islamic theology, but a key reason that Americans are dying in significant numbers in Iraq today. The Quran has two sets of justifications for holy war. One concerns a defensive jihad when a Muslim land is under attack by non-Muslims, while another set of justifications concerns grounds for an offensive jihad, which countenances unprovoked attacks on infidels. Generally, Muslims consider the defensive justifications for jihad to be the most legitimate grounds for war. It was, for instance, a defensive jihad that Muslim clerics invoked against the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan during the 1980s. To the extent that Sunni Muslims, the vast majority of Muslims, have a Vatican, it is the ancient Al-Azhar University in Cairo, the preeminent center of Muslim thought. Before the Iraq War, Al-Azhar released a fatwa, a ruling on Islamic law, to the effect that if Crusader forces attacked Iraq, it was an obligation for every Muslim to fight occupation forces. The clerics of Al-Azhar were not alone in this view. The prominent Lebanese cleric and Hezbollah leader, Sheikh Fadlallah, also called on Muslims to fight American forces in Iraq. This is in sharp contrast to what these clerics ruled following the 9/11 attacks. Sheikh Fadlallah issued a fatwa condemning the attackers, as did the chief cleric of Al-Azhar University. And so, while leading Muslim clerics condemned the 9/11 attacks, they also have condoned fighting against the American occupation of Iraq. Some, including President Bush, have suggested that it is better to fight the terrorists on the streets of Baghdad than on those of Boston. This comforting notion is based on the dubious premise that there is a finite number of terrorists who can all be attracted to one place where they can then be killed. The reality is that the Iraq War has greatly expanded the pool of terrorists reflected in the surge of significant attacks since the war began. The year 2003 saw the highest incidence of such acts in two decades, and, astonishingly, the number of significant attacks then tripled in 2004. Given these numbers, it is curious that Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld famously complained that we lack metrics to know if we are winning or losing the global war on terror. Exponentially rising terrorism figures is one metric that seems relevant. President Bush has repeatedly said that Iraq is the central front of the war on terror. This is perhaps the only proposition that the president and Al-Qaeda's leader can agree on. The following statements from bin Laden demonstrate that he, too, sees Iraq as central to his war. On October 18, 2003, Al Jazeera released a message to the Iraqi people from bin Laden. Al-Qaeda's leader reveled in the difficulties U.S. forces were encountering in Iraq. Thank you for your jihad, and may God help you. Be glad of the good news. America is mired in the swamps of the Tigris and Euphrates. Bush is easy prey. Here he is now in an embarrassing situation, and here is America today being ruined before the eyes of the whole world. O youth of Islam everywhere, especially in Iraq's neighboring countries, jihad is your duty. As God is my witness, if I had the opportunity to join you, I would not delay. In an audio tape released on May 6, 2004, bin Laden offered a reward for the assassination of Ambassador L. Paul Jerry Bremer and other high-ranking U.S. officials stationed in Iraq. America has announced major awards to anyone who kills those combating in the name of God, that is, Al-Qaeda's leaders. We in the Al-Qaeda network are committed to an award in the amount of 10 kilos of gold to anyone who kills the occupier Bremer or his deputy or the American forces commander or his deputy in Iraq. In a statement posted to the internet December 16, 2004, Bin Laden emphasized the importance of disrupting Iraq's vital oil industry. Targeting America in Iraq in terms of economy and losses in life is a golden and unique opportunity. Do not waste the opportunity only to regret it later. One of the most important reasons that led our enemies to control our land is the theft of our oil. Do everything you can to stop the biggest plundering operation in history. Be active and prevent them from reaching the oil and mount your operations accordingly, particularly in Iraq and the Gulf. This chapter charts the rise of Al-Qaeda's role in the Iraqi insurgency and the relationship between bin Laden and the most feared insurgent commander in Iraq, the Jordanian Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Zarqawi has had an on-again, off-again relationship with Al-Qaeda going back to the early 1990s, when he first fought in Afghanistan. He set up a training camp in western Afghanistan in 1999 for his Tawheed, Unity of God, group, an organization that was initially somewhat competitive with Al-Qaeda for recruits and resources. However, as the Iraq War entered its second year in 2004, Zarqawi publicly declared his allegiance to bin Laden and changed the name of his organization to Al-Qaeda in the Land of the Two Rivers, that is, Iraq. Now Zarqawi is bin Laden's man on the ground in Iraq, a development that has gratified Al-Qaeda's leaders. Hutaifa Azam, the son of Abdullah Azam, remembers Zarqawi from the time when they fought in Afghanistan against the communists in the early 1990s. I met Zarqawi in 1990 to 1991 in Khost in eastern Afghanistan. He was an ordinary guy, a guy who returned to his God after he made a lot of sins. In Jordan, he was a street guy, a lot of beating people with knives, around 37 cases against him here in Jordan. He was drinking, and he finally decided to return back to Allah. He came to Afghanistan, and he was a good guy. He was very brave. He came back to Jordan in 1993, and he was sent to jail for 15 years, and in 1999, the king gave an amnesty, and he was released in 1999. After that, he went back to Afghanistan again. Doesn't join Al-Qaeda or bin Laden, he went to Herat on the border of Iran. He made his own training camp. I can tell you that he is a brave heart. He is not even a brave heart, he is a dead heart, because he's very, very, very famous fighter. And he doesn't know what is the meaning of frightened or to be afraid. He can fight an army alone. Even if everyone left him, he's ready to fight. Saif Adel has been the military commander of Al-Qaeda since 2002. Like Hutaifa Azam, he first met Zarqawi in Afghanistan in the early 1990s. Adel gives a detailed account of the evolving relationship between Al-Qaeda and Zarqawi in Al-Zarqawi, the Second Al-Qaeda Generation, a book by Fuad Hussein, a Jordanian journalist. The Arabic-language, London-based daily Al-Quds Al-Arabi started serializing the book in May 2005. Saif Adel. I received reports that a group of Jordanians arrived in Kandahar in 1999. I was busy with my work outside the region. I returned to Kandahar 2 weeks after Abu Musab's, al-Zarqawi's, arrival, and I went to meet him at the guest house that provided accommodation for newcomers. In a nutshell, Abu Musab was a hardliner when it came to his disagreements with other fraternal brothers. I was scheduled to meet with both Sheikh bin Laden and Sheikh al-Zawahiri. We had a planned agenda to discuss, after which I suggested that we talk about Abu Musab. Abu Musab was a sturdy man who was not really very good at words. He expressed himself spontaneously and briefly. He would not compromise any of his beliefs. He was uncompromising, but he had a clear objective which he strived to achieve, the re-establishment of Islam in society. He did not have details regarding how to achieve this objective except for comprehending the faith thoroughly and initiating jihad. One of the topics we discussed was that we were not seeking full allegiance from Abu Musab or his companions. Rather, we wanted coordination and cooperation to achieve our joint objectives. The main idea of the resulting project was based on the importance of finding an area in Afghanistan where a simple camp would be established for daily training. Abu Musab would oversee the camp and bring in fraternal brothers from Jordan, Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and Turkey to forge a presence for us in these important areas. The second point that we discussed with some fraternal experts was the importance that such an area would be remote from our headquarters and would be located on the western border of Afghanistan adjacent to Iran. Iran became a safe passage for the fraternal brothers after the Pakistani authorities began to tighten the noose around our movement. It was very difficult for Arabs to arrive in Afghanistan through Pakistan. It was easy, on the other hand, for the brothers to take the Turkey to Iran to Afghanistan route. Herat was a suitable Afghan city near to the Iranian border, and it was somewhat remote from us. The days passed quickly, and the date of our monthly meeting arrived. Abu Musab came carrying good news. The number in the camp amounted to 42 men, women, and children, including the families of Abu Musab and his two companions. Three new Syrian families arrived, including one that came from Europe. Abu Musab was optimistic that they were establishing a mini-Islamic society. He said that fraternal Jordanian and Palestinian brothers would arrive in Herat soon. He said the Iran-Afghanistan route was safe to travel. This issue prompted us to think of building good relations with some virtuous people in Iran to coordinate regarding issues of mutual interest. Coordination with the Iranians was later achieved with sincere individuals who were hostile to the Americans and the Israelis. It was not made with the Iranian government. During this time, I noticed that Abu Musab became more polished. When we first met, he was not the one who would begin a conversation. His ideas and interests in political news were limited. Now, however, he was the one who would start a conversation. He was interested in every issue. He would utilize public relations that might lead his project to success. I noticed that he became more influential when he spoke to someone. He spoke more in standard Arabic, whereas before he used to speak in his normal Jordanian dialect. All these issues indicated that he would become a distinguished leader. The fraternal brothers of various nationalities who converged on Herat to join him received training. These included Syrians, Jordanians, Palestinians, and some Lebanese and Iraqis. Abu Musab was able to build relations with the Kurdish Ansar al-Islam and began to establish bases in northern Iraq in an area outside of Saddam Hussein's control. The U.S. strike against Afghanistan began at the end of 2001. Abu Musab returned to Herat to be close to his fraternal brothers and group. We did not have a clear or defined plan for confrontation. The young men of Al-Qaeda, Taliban, and Abu Musab's group had no other alternative but to withdraw quickly and join us in eastern Afghanistan. They left in a 135-vehicle convoy that carried them, their fraternal Arab brothers of Al-Qaeda in the region, and the remnants of the fraternal Taliban brothers. At the beginning, we decided to defend Kandahar regardless of the consequences. We began to secure the wives and children of the fraternal Arab brothers by sending them to Pakistan. We began to make preparations for confrontation. One day, there was a meeting with some of the important fraternal brothers, including Abu Musab. One fraternal brother used his Thuraya satellite phone. A few minutes after the man used his telephone, I left the site of the meeting with three other fraternal brothers. 10 minutes after our departure, a U.S. plane bombed the house where we held the meeting. Abu Musab and some fraternal brothers were still there. The bombardment resulted in the collapse of the ceiling of the home. No one was killed, but some of the fraternal brothers sustained injuries, including Abu Musab, who suffered from broken ribs. He had bruises as a result of the collapse of the ceiling. The U.S. assault began on Kandahar. The leadership made a new decision to withdraw to the mountains and evacuate the wounded to safe places. Abu Musab was requested to leave for Pakistan since he was wounded. He refused, however, and insisted on joining us to take part in the battle. Everyone who dares to harm this giant elephant, the United States, will be punished. Punishment is total extermination. This was one of the major challenges that faced us at the outset. Thus, the leadership made an audacious decision to dismantle the Taliban emirate and integrate into the Afghan society once again. This move will enable it to return in 7 years in harmony with a well-examined plan that will defeat the Americans and their supporters. We began to converge on Iran, one after the other. The fraternal brothers in the peninsula of the Arabs, Kuwait, and the United Arab Emirates who were outside Afghanistan had already arrived. They possessed abundant funds. We began to rent apartments for the fraternal brothers and some of their families. The fraternal brothers of the group of Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, the hardline Islamist leader in Afghanistan, long allied to Al-Qaeda, offered us satisfactory help in this field. They provided us with apartments and some farms that they owned. Shadi Abdallah, a Jordanian of Palestinian origin, was affiliated with the Al-Tawhid terrorist group, which was led by Zarqawi. He was arrested by German police in April 2002. In his interrogations by German law enforcement, Abdallah describes the founding of Al-Tawhid, its presence in the United Kingdom, and the role of Abu Qatada, its spiritual leader. Abdallah also worked briefly as a bodyguard for bin Laden. Abdallah also explains that Zarqawi, at least up until early 2002, was focused on a campaign of terrorism in Jordan and against Israeli and Jewish targets, not against the United States, which was the essential ideological difference between Al-Tawhid and Al-Qaeda. What follows are summaries of Shadi Abdallah's interrogations by German investigators and direct quotations from those interrogations. Al-Zarqawi, a.k.a. Mohanad, leads a terrorist organization consisting of Jordanian Palestinians called the Group of Mohanad Abu Musab Al-Zarqawi, or Al-Tawhid. Shadi also explained that the name component Al-Zarqawi indicates Zarqawi's origin from the Jordanian town of Zarqa. The center of the organization is Herat, in western Afghanistan. Their headquarters is there too, which is a training camp. Mohanad stayed in Kabul, not at the headquarters. He lived with his family in a private home. One can't tell that Mohanad Zarqawi is the leader of an organization. This is different than in the case of bin Laden, who is always accompanied by his bodyguards. Mohanad moves around quite normally in the streets. You become a member of Zarqawi's group through a handshake with the leader in which one takes an oath of loyalty and obedience. This is common in all organizations. If you are a member of an organization, anything that happens to the organization affects you. You have to carry out orders and you must not betray the organization. One becomes a member of the organization by promising to one's superior, "I promise before God that I will work with you and do whatever pleases Allah and the Prophet Muhammad." One gives this promise after the criteria have been checked, that is, when it is clear that one is Palestinian and Muslim, and one comes from Jordan, and a guarantor has vouched for you. One has also committed oneself to following the Sharia faithfully. In addition, one has to reject a worldly order like what exists in Jordan at the moment. There are many members of Al-Tawhid, not only in Afghanistan, but also in Great Britain. People from Western countries enjoyed special prestige in the organization because they could move freely between countries. The goals of the organization are attacks on Jewish, Israeli, and Jordanian facilities, in particular on Israeli targets in Jordan and the Jordanian army. Concrete plans were developed only immediately before their execution. The attacks are supposed to be carried out with explosives or arms. Al-Tawhid, ALT, is mainly present in two European countries, Germany and the UK. The root of the catastrophe, from Al-Qaeda's perspective, is the United States. From Al-Tawhid's perspective, it's Israel. The main targets of both organizations are therefore primarily American in the case of Al-Qaeda. For Al-Tawhid, they are Israeli or Jewish. Al-Qaeda recruits its members from all Arab countries. But there are parallel organizations that recruit only from their own countries. An example is Al-Tawhid, which recruits its members only from Jordan. These organizations pursue only goals that have something to do with their home countries. Examples would be organizations consisting of people from Syria, Algeria, or Tunisia. Bin Laden pursues the goal of uniting all organizations and of focusing on the common enemy, the United States. I know that an attack was planned against a significant tourist destination in Jordan around the time of the millennium, a mountain on which the prophet Moses is thought to have stood to show the Jews the Holy Land, Mount Nebo, Jordan. This is a destination for tourists, in particular Jews. This plot was broken up by Jordanian intelligence. Currently, Jewish and Israeli facilities all over the world and suitable targets in the United States, France, Great Britain, and Germany are all targets. In early 2002, the members of Al-Tawhid began discussing attacks on Jewish facilities in Germany. The group was very upset about the latest developments in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. No concrete plans were developed. I never joined Al-Tawhid. I didn't take an oath of loyalty. My intimate relationship to Zarqawi was based on my acquaintance with Abu Ali, an Al-Tawhid leader. Zarqawi frequently asked me to take the oath, but I kept postponing under the pretext that first I would like to get to know better him and the religion. My position within the organization was so strong that I could afford to postpone the oath. I was very important for the organization because I had a residence permit for Germany. I only talked to certain people on the phone under Abu Ali's orders and asked these people to give money. Some of this money was collected in mosques. It comes from rich businessmen who are very religious. We tell these people that the money is used for religious purposes. They don't know in most cases that the money goes to Al-Qaeda or other organizations. For the religious legitimization of an attack, this was primarily the responsibility of Abu Qatada, not of Muhammad, an alias for Zarqawi. There is a person above Muhammad in England called Abu Qatada. The interrogation of Shadi Abdallah clarifies an important point. Zarqawi's longtime spiritual mentor is Abu Qatada, a Jordanian cleric who settled in London in 1993. After the July 7, 2005 bombings in London that killed 56 people, the British government set in motion a plan to deport Abu Qatada to his native Jordan. The centerpiece of the Bush administration's case for going to war in Iraq was Secretary of State Colin Powell's presentation to the UN Security Council on February 5, 2003. One section of Powell's speech tried to make the case for an emerging alliance between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda in the person of Zarqawi. What I want to bring to your attention today is the potentially much more sinister nexus between Iraq and the Al-Qaeda terrorist network, a nexus that combines classic terrorist organizations and modern methods of murder. Iraq today harbors a deadly terrorist network headed by Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, an associate and collaborator of Osama bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda lieutenants. However, much of what German intelligence agencies had discovered from their informant Shadi Abdallah and other sources in 2002 indicated that Zarqawi and Al-Qaeda were as much in competition as in cooperation. What follows are summaries from a German Bureau of Criminal Investigations, BKA, report on Zarqawi. Thus, according to Shadi Abdallah, there was a demarcation between Al-Qaeda and the ideology pursued by al-Zarqawi. There is respect as fellow Muslims, but different objectives are followed. The objectives of al-Zarqawi are attacks against the officers of the military, the police, and the secret service, the fall of the Jordanian government, and the establishment of an Islamic state, as well as attacks against the Jews and Jewish interests. From the point of view of Zarqawi, the Jews represent the root of all evil. But from the point of view of Al-Qaeda, it is the U.S. Moreover, Zarqawi mentioned to Abdallah that the possibility of a merger conflicted with the religious orientation of Abu Hafs al-Mauritania, who was responsible within Al-Qaeda for religious or Islamic matters, which contradicted the teachings practiced by Zarqawi. This opinion at that time is said to have led to other groups, such as that of Zarqawi, not joining Al-Qaeda. Even in the interrogations of Al-Qaeda leaders, there are no indications of Zarqawi's membership in Al-Qaeda. Thus, Abu Zubaydah, an Al-Qaeda recruiter, in one of his interrogations, speaks instead about the group of Al-Zarqawi.